James Gilliland with As You Wish Talk Radio on BBS. We're broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, otherwise known as UFO and Paranormal Central. Our guest tonight is J.J. Hertek and Desiree, his beautiful wife. And before going too far, I think everybody knows J.J. with the Keys of Enoch and all of his other archaeology work and international lecturer, author, you name it. It just goes on and on. But I don't want to go too far in that. I just want to welcome J.J. on the show so we don't miss any of this fascinating information. So, J.J. and Desiree, are you with us?
Yes, we're here. We wanted to thank you for having us aboard. Also, thank you for pioneering efforts up there in Washington and this very important area that you're, so to speak, a pillar of light for.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think the pillar was already here. I just kind of kicked it up a little bit, you know, playing with it.
But, well, as you know, the Native American traditions are very, very strong. I think this is one of the key areas why there's so much activity in North America over Mexico, the United States, and Canada. Key areas are being visited, particularly the archaeological areas, the sacred areas that, needless to say, reflect coming changes that must be approached through a higher sense of unity. And that's what we like about your work, is the focus on unity and a higher message of encouragement, devotion, and a positive future.
Yeah, there's a lot of legends here with the Yakima Nation that they actually work with some beings that their eyes actually glowed at night. And whenever they had people sick or wounded or broken legs or whatever, they used to take them up to the mountain and drop them off in a certain place, and somebody would come out and meet them and go take them inside. And they would get a telepathic message to the elders or whatever, and they'd come back and pick them up later, and they'd be completely healed.
James, nice to be on your show. One of the things we also know about the West Coast, because, as you know, we're down in California, is that there's a certain crystalline energy in the mountains, too, that seems to resonate and help in all this process and probably is coded there as a place for the higher intelligence to, tune into.
Oh yeah, there's amethyst all over this place, and you can just dig it up or, you know, break it out of the rocks.
And to me, that's a very healing stone. Sometimes I've even told people if they're not feeling well or, you know, they have run down energy, to put amethyst around them. We're not into crystals per se, but, you know, there's certain energies and elements that are just natural around that help tremendously.
You know, a lot of top physicists and scientists actually end up working with crystals. It seems to be, you know, the ultimate,
we had this opportunity to work with Marshall Vogel many years ago at IBM, and also so many others who have had backgrounds either in Los Alamos or the national think tanks who have worked looking at the physical chemistry and coming to other conclusions that this is not a living planet that's cut off from a greater evolutionary process. But we at the Academy for Future Science bring together the overall map of how the physical sciences, the life sciences, the human sciences, the individual purpose, of course, which is the understanding of life, and the spiritual sciences of the universal purpose all converge. And this is why it's so important to keep an open strategy, as you have done in recent times, to bring together engineers, scientists, educators, journalists, who want to see the evidence of something that is truly remarkable.
Yeah, we had some Boeing people up here again last night, and we had a beautiful ship come over and power up twice and got it on film, and then we had two real low ones right in the air traffic pattern. They were just bright gold. They had no running lights or anything on them, and they put on quite a show. They did some nice fast turns and then sped off, and so we've got a huge contingent of Boeing people that come up here on a regular basis now.
Yeah, we know there's a big Boeing plant up there. You know, one of the maps in the Keys of Enoch is called the Return of the Dove, and that
yeah.
area just north of Portland that goes up towards Tacoma, I know that's right about where you are, isn't it?
Yes. We're above Tacoma. You know where Hood River, Oregon is?
Okay, the
Columbia River?
Yeah, I think we've been in some of that area, but I was saying that there's two little extra circles on the map over by these wings of the dove that are right
uh-huh.
in that area, and it's kind of a sacred area of protection, even though there will be changes on different levels around the east and west coast. Those particular areas of those extra circles, which is right where you are, is
mm-hmm.
the protection area, so it's very, very good.
The dove symbolizes what is known as the La Paloma in Central America, in Mexico. In North America, it's the symbol of the higher intelligence coming back, that is, of the peaceful purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And with the head of the dove over Yucatan, we have found crystalline skulls, miniature crystal skulls, some 25 years ago, which I shared with many of my colleagues, including Christopher Bird, Andre Puharic, and others who had worked privately behind the scenes in the think tanks to figure out how the ancient cultures could have such a marvelous development of tools for vacuum deposit of artifacts within the crystal itself, the articulation of the optical systems of the small miniature skulls, the most important which is the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, which is the larger of a series of skulls that have been found in former British Honduras and Yucatan, and then also the ability to use crystalline devices for communication purposes.
Yeah, we had one of the skulls that Judy Mingo, who used to work with Marcel Vogel, you probably met her. And
yes, I
she
did.
Brought a skull that Marcel, I guess he carved or somebody carved it for him. It had all these pyramids on top of it.
Yes.
And it was an incredible crystal skull, and she had it in a box. And she walked up to the house, and I go, what have you got in that box, a crystal skull or something? Because I could feel it. And she just looked
at
me.
One of the artifacts I showed Marcel, which he prized, was a very smooth stone I received from a geologist in Ecuador. And on the side of this very smooth stone was 7 gold flakes. And these gold flakes were perfectly square, deposited within the stone at a depth of more than, I would say, 1/4 inch. And the geometry of the gold flakes spelled out the configuration of the constellation of the Pleiades. And no one could figure out how ancient craftsmen could put such remarkable metallurgy in the stone material. It's such a unique configuration. This is one for the books, to use a familiar quote from a scientist to scratch their head. But Marcel looked at this stone. He was very, very intrigued, and he, of course, did much of the work behind the scenes for many
mm-hmm.
of the specialists. Unfortunately, it disappeared after Marcel left for the other side. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's out there someplace in somebody else's collection, and it's a reflection of many of the most important artifacts that go back before written history and records, suggesting that there were clearly contact civilizations many tens of thousands, if not millions of years ago on this planet.
And, of course, the Pleiades has been popularized in different extraterrestrial contexts, but, of course, ancient civilizations all over the world considered it very, very sacred. The keys tell us that the Pleiades is actually connected with our own creative birth.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to differ a little bit with Billy Myers because, of course, he's the most popular with the Pleiades. But, if you really read his research, it doesn't say that his contacts are from the Pleiades. It actually says they're from Lyra. And he kind of, maybe before that goes back to the Pleiades. In a sense, we're all kind of connected with the Pleiades. We also are from the Pleiades in terms of an Adamic race on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had a few run-ins with the Myers group ourselves. And
well,
there's quite a few discrepancies there.
I think this is one of the things, though, that we wanted to get across tonight. I know a lot of people who listen to extraterrestrial talks and information, you know, want to say that we're all hybrid experiments and that, you know, we've been here hybridized. I'm not sure where you stand on that, James. Do you have a particular position on that?
Well, you know, my feeling is that I think we're just a big genetic soup down here. And there's a lot of different star nations that were involved. And it's just my feeling. I think, you know, that certain root races came from certain systems. If you're white-skinned, you know, you're basically Lyrian-based or Pleiadian-based. I've always felt that the Pleiades established the first colonies of Atlantis and Lemuria.
Yeah, I think we would say something like that. We actually also feel that, you know, when we get out into space, we're going to find ourselves there. And so if we were just hybrids that someone had come down here to make, then we wouldn't find ourselves up there because it would be some experiment down here on this planet, you know, which is not going to be valid. I mean, that's not real. So
I agree.
That's why I was using these expressions more in a metaphorical area of referring to many distant civilizations and scattered throughout the world rather than one particular area.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we have been very busy collecting samples with people throughout the world, working with geologists. I've had a background in remote sensing technology. I've worked also with remote viewing experiments. I've had the opportunity to work with both astronauts and cosmonauts in terms of looking carefully at some of the information that they have put together. In more recent times, we see that there's a much greater need for a new astronomy cosmology that suggests that we are one of many evolutions all converging from this galactic soup, and that there is a greater need to bring together a higher purpose of where we are on the roadmap.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I think it's time to just completely transcend all cultural and all boundaries here, you know, religious boundaries as well, and come together and get the basics down first, you know, of being kind to each other and being kind to the planet, and then we can go off from there, but at least let's not step away from the basics.
Yeah, because whatever, you know, side you want to take on this, in the beginning, at least in the Bible, we're told we're the caretakers of this planetary system. And, you know, in the book of Genesis, we have the trees and the animals that we're all supposed to be taking care of. And, of course, I think if this is really Schoolhouse Earth, in a sense, we're failing that experiment.
I agree 100%. Now, the celestial sons of God in the Bible, would you say those would be the Pleiadians returning?
No, the celestial sons refer to the B'nai Elohim. These are those that are ultra-terrestrial, in no way are in the physical domain of having physical technology or physical bodies. These are forms of intelligence that are essentially in an energy form that can take on any shape or manifest into any type of evolutionary process of a given planetary society.
I was going to say, we make a difference between, like, extraterrestrial and ultra-terrestrial. Extraterrestrial being, you know, even though they can be plasma ships and different things like that, they usually are just, you know, working between, say, the third and the sixth dimension. And then, you know, beyond some of that, then you get into these more powerful levels of intelligence, which also coordinate with, you know, extraterrestrial intelligence or human intelligence. As you know, I think you had some contact also with kind of higher beings that aren't necessarily all extraterrestrial, right?
No, yeah, exactly. I mean, it goes back to the source itself and my own drowning experience, but I just see there's a vibrational continuum all the way down to this 3D reality we're experiencing here, and there's life all along that continuum, and there's all kinds of beings out there, and you know, some are physical, some are, you know, pure energy, some are have magnetized light bodies, and some are just pure consciousness, and they have vehicles all along that vibrational continuum, you know, like the Merkaba that you often talk about. And, you know,
we have this illustrated in a DVD called the Merkaba, which is now available in 7 languages for those who may be interested. If they go to one of our websites, keysofenoch.com, they can experience what I consider swimming in hyperspace, the ability to see and experience many different cultures simultaneously through the higher vehicle transport, the ancient biblical writers called the Merkabah, which is not a UFO because it brings a revelation, it brings a aspect of divinity, of the respect for the human psyche and spiritual dimension rather than a violation of same. And it also is connected with the higher realms of the Godhead in the sense that it no longer has to be involved in these lower dialectics that you see so much in the extraterrestrial experiments, in the UFO experiments that are in many ways overwhelming and, how should I say, paralyzing to those who are not really prepared to entertain this type of reality.
Although the Keys talk about a whole different, you know, level of extraterrestrial connections throughout the universe, from like the Arcturian peoples who are like the midwayers, the shepherding mechanisms, they deal with extraterrestrial and kind of ultra-terrestrial balances. Because like you said, they're in touch. The higher ultra-terrestrials kind of guard and direct, you know, some of the extraterrestrial intelligences. And so then also, of course, those from Orion. And this is kind of the cosmology of the Keys.
You know, I had a an experience with it. It's on my website, and it's Malia from Orion. And I actually have a drawing of her, exactly what she looks like. And I watched the Merkabah video, and when I saw that picture of the woman from Orion that you had on there, it was almost identical. And it shocked me. I went, oh, my.
That there is a verisimilitude between the experiences you have had documented and what we have drawn through artists of the Academy who put many hours of painstaking work into putting these human-like and ultra-terrestrial forms into a film format so people can actually experience. And Desiree earlier referred to the so-called Meyer Pleiadians, which are not really true Pleiadians. And the Keys of Enoch, published in 73, actually mentioned the Semyaza forces 2 years before they made their appearance in Switzerland and caused such a negative fallout by way that people were brought into situations of not knowing one way or the other what was being played out or what was being manifest. What's happening now, as you know, is the positive forces are giving real scientific and spiritual messages of unity and are really working in cooperation with those who seek to rise beyond the politics of denial and the singularities of religiosity to see a much greater cosmology.
And we're excited because the Keys also talk about a space-time overlap where the two levels of, you know, higher levels of intelligence are coming closer to this reality. And I think people are picking up on this. I know you've had experiences, but people all over, even just in meditations or in dream states, are starting to tune in to these other levels of intelligence. And so we, you know, we're very excited about that. And I think it's important because if people aren't tuning into that, then they're starting to feel like kind of a shifting on the planet, and they don't know what to do with that. And it's kind of maybe even hurting people's health in some ways, because many people are also getting sick who aren't, you know, tuning in. I don't know how you feel about that.
Oh, no, I definitely do. They're not matching the new frequencies, and it's really, you know, wreaking havoc on their bodies and their emotional bodies as well. They're just all over the place right now with these new frequencies.
Yeah, so we recommend people to meditate in the mornings and in the evenings and try to tune into, you know, their higher, we call it overself, their higher selves that are able to reach out into the greater cosmos. And with that, they can bring in that energy, and they can be protected in many ways, whether it's the physical protection or emotional protection, and they're just more centered.
You know, they've been giving me this message lately, and people that know me know I'm not a Bible thumper, you know. But, you know, I've read the Bible, and I've read a lot of the ancient texts and a lot of the Hindu texts as well, and they all seem to point to, you know, the ancient ships and the different types of ships and the beings that interacted with us and the higher consciousness. But I've been getting this message over and over lately, and this is from the Pleiadians that I've been in contact with, and they've been talking about God a lot, and they say God is coming, and they said it's a frequency and a force, and it's moving through everything, and they said that the real God is coming in the old program, especially the the consciousness of tyranny is going to fold in on itself. It just can't function with the presence of these new energies. Have you heard anything like this?
Yes, I have. And, you know, I'm familiar with the Sanskrit texts. I've translated some of the ancient texts of the Prajnaparamita Sutra from the 10th century. Some of my work, as you know, is also the retranslation of the biblical Aramaic and the Greek text of the Textus Receptus of the biblical tradition in a context of future science to look at the deeper nuances of the angelic kingdoms and the reality of the Elohim as a positive God force working with the realm of the Holy Spirit as an indwelling vehicle of experience of the many worlds, the multiverse that you and others speak of, with the understanding that the Bible is also a textbook that one goes through in realizing the God of dualism and the lower dialectic is not really the true God of the Scriptures. The true God of the Scriptures is one of divine love, unconditional love, who gives the love letter of a house of many mansions and gives us through the gifts of the Spirit the opportunity to reach out and overcome the mental, the intellectual, the political crucifixions that we inflict upon ourselves and humanity tragically inflicts in the name of God, giving God a bad name. But we're seeing now really the coming of a global mind change, a whole new consciousness that has taken us away from materialistic monism of the 19th and 20th century, the dualism of the in the West of the first 19, 20 centuries of putting science and religion in opposition to one of a transcendental experience of a futurism, emergent spirituality, and what I would call a pluralistic sense of understanding, whereby the divine spark is recognized in each and every individual who seeks to be really full of the Christ consciousness or the prophetic vision, or what some would call the in the Old Testament the Shekinah, the divine presence, in the way they use their gifts of life in this world as best they can in view of our brothers and sisters from the other worlds that are coming in this direction, and yet in some sense have always been here, embedded within the consciousness of life itself.
So we see really a greater coordination of all these really higher consciousness forces that are permeating the whole universe. And of course, it's not just for here. I think you know that, James.
Yes.
That it really is the whole galaxy. We say it's a galactic house cleaning in that sense, or day of graduation, and it's not just for this planet. And the Pisa Sophia, a book that we work with, which is an ancient Coptic Christian text, is Egyptian Christian, talks about the oppositionary force is really that of self-will, that of the individual, you know, the mentality that the individual sees himself alone and separate and therefore wants to acquire all things for himself. And that's really the opposition. And even if you look at that in terms of larger, you know, countries or dictatorships or whatever, and then eventually the other side or the divine God force is really the collective work together that we all share and that we all do. And, of course, that's why you get hierarchies and brotherhoods and sisterhoods on the other side that people talk about.
So what we're saying is that the whole new cosmological roadmap has to be redefined in the concept of scientific measurement and understanding has to be also redefined because the old paradigms are not sufficient to explain the many orders or levels of the cosmic intelligence from we who are stellar humans to those experimental cultures around us that are the ETs to the angelic, what we call the ultra-terrestrial to those even of divine lordship and the sons of the divine or the celestial family that expands continually as the divine rediscovers himself, herself, itself, showing that there's a consistency between the true divine nature of life and the true laws of science as we understand the sustained and ongoing process in the evolutionary dimension of creation.
It seems very clear now that quantum physics and the higher physics is all moving into the spiritual realms. It has to, because it hits a big dead end. And the old religious beliefs are kind of falling away too as well, and there seems to be a merge that's happening where spirit and science are merging now, and they do complement each other once we let go of the old dogmas and the old control, you know, factions.
We try to show this in our new book called The End of Suffering. Russell Targ, who worked at Stanford Research Institute, who did the remarkable paraphysical test of sensitives, very, very gifted people who could put their mind across the Atlantic and see under the ground Russian installations, certain technologies which then could be retrieved by the power of the mind. And I stand face to face with how the scientific community in this country is changing, and people are looking really for better expressions of what we could call the divine experience, the evolutionary experience, and science which is more experiential rather than the old school, which is simply based upon empirical measurement of repeated trial and error.
And that's why we call our organization the Academy for Future Science, even though it's really philosophical and consciousness-based.
Mm-hmm.
But science and, you know, philosophy or the new cosmology will come together and is coming together. And all it needs to do is really take that next step. And it's really there in the Bible. It's in the Mahabharata. It's in all the ancient texts.
Mm-hmm.
It just, we've always had this three-dimensional veil and top of our head, so to speak, and we really need to open that up to realize that there's always been these massive levels of intelligence out there in the universe on so many levels, and in a sense we've been protected from our awareness of all the different levels. That was, we believe, if you go back to the Tower of Babel in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
it was because they were able to communicate with these different levels of intelligence, and for a short period of time now, you know, we've been able to grow ourselves as a species. But now we're getting that quantum leap now into outer space, and we're going to be really rudely awakened for many people to the multiple levels of intelligence that are available to us.
So we're growing beyond scientific babble in the ancient languages.
Yeah.
Bible, babble, and Bible are all interchangeable in terms of the ancient Hebrew consonants. So what we're saying is there's always going to be this confusion of methodologies and language on the conventional level of understanding. One has to go to look for the real artifacts, the footprints of earlier civilization to really open the back doors up to the Old Testament, as well as the front doors of science and religion to futurism that awaits us during this great quantum change. We've been fortunate many years ago, while we were in Africa working near Klerksdorf, to come across these spherical objects that were then brought back by us to have analyzed at Jet Propulsion Lab in Los Angeles. And it was found that placed in a special lab, these objects would rotate twice a year without being touched. They were perfectly balanced. They were approximately 1 to 4 inches in diameter. And when they were broken open by NASA scientists, they had a type of aluminum silicate material. Some of them had a type of nickel alloy material, but there was not really any sense of magnetic properties that were there within the spheres themselves, all of which were uniquely capped, like a pill that one would take from a pharmacist.
Hmm.
In a few words, these have been dated to be millions of years old, possibly even as old as a billion years. If this is true, even by a fraction of time, it would show some fantastic time capsules that were left behind, embedded in certain parts of the world, that might be the gold of the Elohim, or the fingerprints of the Elohim reaching back into human history to bring these unique artifacts into the interplay of the human scientific community as
now,
a sign
would
of
you
their
say that,
past engineering.
Yeah, would you say that It's been my experience that there were extremely advanced cultures on this planet, much, much more advanced than this civilization, that, you know, had to start over as primitives due to great wars and cataclysms and things of that nature, and we're just catching up right now.
Exactly, and I think definitely cataclysms probably was some of the most, we've seen the evidence of the cataclysms, such as Dr. Jack did research in Yanaguni, where you see the how the water levels have risen over some of the castle and the stage. These artifacts are now found underneath the water. And, of course, you have in the Mahabharata the Vimana, and talks about how people who lived in these areas all had flying discs and flying vehicles, and they even get very elaborate as to, you know, how large they were, what their propulsion energy was, and things like that, all in these ancient texts, but everyone took them as only mythology. But there's no reason to believe that they were mythology. They very well probably were the reality. And I think there was actually even another artifact from Egypt that shows a flying disc.
Then in the year 2001, we were guests at a world conference in Vienna. And at that conference, we had the opportunity to meet with Dr. Khalid Mathia's family, who is located underneath the sands of Saqqara, a small wing-like plane model. And this was photographed. It was put on exhibit along with something like 300 other artifacts that had been flown in by various governments throughout the world, placed in glass cases with guards, showing that it had aerodynamic properties which would rival anything that we would have at the original Skunk Works here on the West Coast, from the Lockheed geniuses some 30, 40, 50 years ago. So what we're saying is the database of information is increasing tremendously, and we're seeing in the midst of all of the verbal confusion, Desiree and I will call the Tower of Babel, a clear message that is written in stone that is much earlier than human language as we recognize it, that goes back to the foundations of a much earlier cycle of the evolutionary process. And it's this earlier cycle that's the culture shock that may have been one of the reasons why government authorities clamped down on sharing information regarding the ET paradigms back in the 40s and 50s, along with the Cold War. Now that we've crossed the bridge of other understanding and have grown up in a generation of Steven Spielberg and Dijkstra and other technical geniuses, I think people are prepared to understand that the human experiment is far older, in that we are recapitulating in our knowledge base things that our ancestors, going all the way back to pre-biblical times, had noted very, very carefully in the constructs and the models they put or seated in the earth.
But there were probably other levels of intelligence here, too, because the Bible talks about the giants and the... It says that they had six fingers and six toes, and of course that's from the Middle East, the Bible. And then you look at petroglyphs in Brazil, and there's figures that have six fingers on them very, very clearly. So you say, you know, how did something from Brazil and the Middle East both end up with six fingers? Was there some other intelligence that was also upon the planet? And one has to conclude yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely it looks that way. The Now, there's a lot of skeletons they've been digging up that are enormous.
Giant,
have you been
yes.
partying any of those? Or?
Well, I've had the opportunity to work in East Europe and have seen footprints in stone in Hungary and have heard of reports in Russia of the giants in southern Africa. I had the opportunity to show at this conference on Unsolved Mysteries an actual picture of a prehistoric footprint that was 1.5 meters long and that had an instep that was quite remarkable. The granitite material around the foot and the other features of the footprint were examined by various scientists, and the majority agreed that it obviously had to have been formed in a different period of African history. Some cataclysm took place, and the horizontal footprint was heaved up into a vertical position. So I've had this recorded and shown in several exhibits, one in Austria, one in Japan, and I hope to come out with a film document on this for those who are anthropologists who might be a bit skeptical that there was at one time when the Earth had a different atmosphere, an opportunity for plants to grow to a greater height, and humans to also grow to great heights, similar to the Egyptian statuary that shows beings of upwards of 24 to 28 feet in height. Remarkable, but certainly that would match the great Buddhas that we see of the East, connected with sacred space and sacred temples.
Yeah, it seems to be there's, you know, the forbidden archaeology, you know, that seems to be tucked away all over the place that doesn't jive with the original story. If that came out, I've always felt we need a new history book, you know, one that just goes back, you know, 28 million years plus and says, okay, this is what really happened. This is the real story, you know, not...
It's starting to come out like with the little hobbits from the Isle of Flores. And it's interesting that right below Yanaguni, where there was the sunken civilization, is also the Isle of Flores and these small beings. So that came out in terms of being confirmed by scientists, and they have to address that kind of issue that they're still questioning whether it was a completely different species or whether it was associated with our species and maybe just a, you know, a mutation or a different angle off the curve, so to speak. But I believe it probably was a different species in some sense.
So if you go to the map of the world and look at Taiwan and you draw a line straight down at 121 degrees, 27 minutes longitude east, you cross into Indonesia. And in the Keys of Enoch, Key 215, published in 73, we have a map of the world of 12 earlier points of evolution or contact experience, and one goes right through the Isle of Flores that Desiree is talking about. So it's this interesting fact of the keys that they're opening at the door to previous moments in anthropology, culture history, and paraphysics, whereby we're going to find more and more of earlier experiments and the updating of the human race and the fact that we are but one of many phases of life in the Book of Life that we're going through in this great quantum change that's now upon us.
Yeah, at this conference, Unsolved Mysteries, which they hope to put in various parts of the world, it's already been shown two times in different museums in Europe, there was this one huge rock, it was a very old rock, and inside of it had a type of hammer. And so the hammer had to be older than the rock because of the way it's put in there. And this is from a man from Texas who came out and found this artifact. So, I mean, more and more is just being uncovered, and it is changing our history of the planet. But I also believe, so in addition to having a new cosmology, like you said, we need a new history, we need a whole understanding, and that's going to help us in making the new changes that are taking place on the planet, because not only is this planet rapidly changing through environmental structures, but it seems that maybe there's a whole cycle going on throughout the whole solar system, as you might have heard from Mars also hasn't had the winters that, you know, it normally has.
So all of this may be highly confusing to people out there in Radio Land that are looking at all of the bits and pieces, and this is why we need to put together a whole new map of where we're going in the evolutionary process, because without putting the artifacts within the greater realm of historical testing and experimentation, we can get easily lost in the flotsam and jetsam of having too much information.
Mm-hmm. Now,
we are presently putting together a much larger scope of documents that we'll have available in films, and what Desiree referred to is referring to the London artifact of the hammer within the stone that was found some years ago in Texas. But we have found similar artifacts in South Africa. We have found interesting artifacts also in parts of East Europe that would show that there is clearly many places where cultural evolution took place at a much earlier period of time.
Yeah, one of the other interesting things, of course, getting towards the extraterrestrial, is that elongated skull. And many people, of course, attribute that to maybe parts of Africa, and some people, of course, it's been found in the museums of South America and Peru and Colombia. But what was interesting at this one Unsolved Mysteries conference is they actually found the same type of skull in Germany. It was, like, amazing. You had to look at it twice. Like, this is from Germany? So, and it's, of course, very, very old. And this also could be a sign of another civilization that had been upon the planet, and maybe just, you know, it's like those Egyptian pictures, as you know, with the elongated skull. So they very well could have been visitors who just came around for a short period of time.
I always felt, you know, that if you look at the headdresses that, you know, some of the pharaohs wore, and they had these really tall hats. And my thing was, the reason they had really tall hats is that they had really big heads. You know,
they were hiding stuff in there.
Yeah,
well, yeah, of course, the Egyptians. The Egyptians definitely had a knowledge of the stars, and of course they pointed us to Orion on one side and Sirius. Those are very key star systems, and we believe one side of the Great Pyramid points to Orion, the other side to Alpha Draconis and the dragon, and that's like the circumpolar stars that show how we're kind of trapped in this cycle of three-dimensional reality. Whereas if we can break through that cycle and go the other direction, so to speak, we can go into Orion, which is really a gateway to many universes.
Well, those are what you're speaking about, going back in terms of planetary time, some 10,000 years, and reconstructing the positions in the sky according to the previous orientation of the star shafts. We had an opportunity in 1977 to use gas lasers to look down the star shafts from the outer shell of the Great Pyramid, and we realized as they went down some 65 meters through this mountain of stone that there had to be a different level of engineering to do such perfect orientation with Orion some 1,400 light years away. So what we're saying to the radio audience is that just hold your breath, fasten your seatbelt, and be prepared for this change that's about to occur on our planetary level of history. Things are going to come together so quickly from all directions that we need to have an interdisciplinary approach. We need to make use of the worldwide media to bring out clear understanding of a much larger culture history. We need to bring out a deeper appreciation of why the biological sciences must team up with the social and the spiritual sciences if we are to work with the highest level of cosmic intelligence coming in our direction. Otherwise, we're simply the playthings for lower forms of experimental intelligence that may be taking its baby steps through our cosmos and using the human body for medical homework, or worse yet, being biological batteries for an experiment that doesn't go anyplace. We firmly believe that there are the divine levels that are watching and waiting this first series of experiments come to inclusion, which is to say that we are not to bow down to the space gods and make them into a way of liberation, but to realize there are things that we can use for the sharing of knowledge and for the quickening of our own divinity, that is to say the embryo God self waking up to the true divinity of the great prophets, the great sages, and the mystics that speaks from the highest realms possible.
And there seems to be a big danger in worship outside of self versus, you know, I always tell people, you know, rather than worship God, become the God, you know, that you're worshiping, find it within, then merge with it and become one with it. And you know, it's not going to get upset. There's no competition there. There's no jealousy. You know, there's, you know, just relax and merge with it. But
if you read very carefully the book of Psalms, if you read very carefully the book of Revelation in the New Testament, you clearly understand that the whole quickening experience, the whole awakening experience, is to reclaim the cosmic citizenship that's promised for the sons and daughters of light, or God, who realize their realm is in companionship with those from the house of many mansions. Whereas the psalmist tells us in the first psalm that we are to activate the tree of life within us, realizing that is the model that is found in all cultures of the world, of a galaxy that reaches into a super galaxy, that reaches into a super galaxy of the many branches of the levels of the divine family and all of its pluralistic wonder. So we are in a unique area of recognizing that the ordinary reality we perceive is not one universe, but a harmony of phases of movements of an indefinite number of universes. And each of these individual universes contains constructs and configurations of an indefinite number of other universes and subuniverses with all variations and possibilities. In other words, this realm of abundance is something that's so staggering, it's just hard for us to imagine the cosmos that's connected with another cosmos that's connected with another cosmos. But this is the interplay of what the keys call the infinite mind, the infinite way, and the infinite specieshood.
And also the many and the one, and that's the important thing to understand, how we are part of that divine oneness, but we're also in the plurality. But it's the unity of all of us coming together. One of the reasons the Keys of Enoch has the sacred letters of the divine name on the cover, the Yod, He, Vod, He, It's actually a tetragrammaton, so you can change it instead of being one power of the four letters, which is really a three letters because it uses the hey twice. You reverse it to hey vod, hey yod, and it's all the myriad aspects of what God is, so that people don't identify God like a being with white hair sitting somewhere that they can worship. It is the infinite splendor that is that source of all beingness that we represent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my own near-death experience, I merged with this golden light and just pure consciousness and energy. And I felt like it was to be unique, yet one at the same time with the greater force surrounding you. So it was kind of a paradox because you could still be unique yet one with the source at the same time. And I was a light being and part of that greater light, but I still maintained a sense of self, you might say, which was quite interesting.
Yeah, that's very profound because the idea is exactly what we're trying to say, that there is that wholeness of all, but yet you still are who you are and what you are, and you can manifest. And I think that's an interesting thing. We don't talk about reincarnation. Dr. Jack prefers the word biogenesis because you are that being that you had experienced, and you can manifest anywhere you want to in terms of your own manifestation. So yet you really are never separate from the whole. It's really just the illusion that we really are separate.
Well, that ancient soul, you know, some of the stuff coming out of Billy Meyer where they're saying that he's an ancient, ancient soul where there is no time and spirit, you know. So I don't know how you get the ancient thing. And then, you know, the other one, I guess what they said was that the Plajarans, there was good Plajarans and bad Plajarans, and the good Plajarans kicked out the bad Plajarans, and he's the only contactee on the planet. And it just kept going on and on and on. And I just said, well, wait a minute, that's totally contradictive of your own book and DVDs, and you know, you said the contacts quit in the 70s, late 70s, because you're turning over in your mind and the group couldn't get their act together or something. But, you know, needless to say, there was so many discrepancies in that, and people were at a loss after that interview on the Art Bell Show, and they just said, well, what do you mean? You know, there's no other life forms or no other advanced civilizations or ultra dimensionals out there. There's just Plajarans and Billy, and that's all we got.
And, well, with all due respect to the Swiss scientists and the American people who have been following this one particular scenario, the Keys of Enoch do point out clearly in Key 110 that there are the Samyaza forces that are still growing up and doing testing that will cause great confusion, and I think this is one of the reasons why we are told in the greater teachings of the Keys of Enoch and the lost text that the work of Enoch is to reestablish really the greater science, the foundations of which are understanding that we all reach this level of judging the angels, making our own evaluations and going on from this point, not that we live in negativity or simply live in two-dimensional, three-dimensional creation, but we realize that we have the freedom to evolve into the many and the one.
And the problem with Billy Meyer's material, exactly what you pointed out, is that there was an exclusiveness to that. And I think that everyone, whoever listens to information from extraterrestrials or anything, should realize that the exclusivity where there's only the few chosen or whatever is really the negation. It's that self-willed instead of those who can help all people and are here for all people to work together and to see the unity of all species and all races really working and sharing together. I think one of the interesting things also with Billy Meyer is I remember there was an episode where he saw a light that came into his area and around, and it really shocked him. He didn't know what that light presence was, and it actually stopped him from doing his contact for a while. And I think that was really a higher probe checking out what, you know, he was doing here, and, you know, he didn't even understand that higher probe.
The keys tell us that our soul is doomed to perfection, and that we have to go through various tests and various rounds of experience to see really the greater plan, that we are part really of a divine creation that goes through many phases, some of which are hard to understand in terms of human logic, some of which are the reintegration of experiments that did not work out. But we are really clearly going to see so much of science go forward in the medical sciences, in the biological sciences and new findings of archaeology and anthropology that we're doing in Egypt, in China, in Brazil. We've come across interesting artifacts that are so profound, we believe it's going to bring religion and science to a much higher common ground of recognizing that before what we called the dynastic periods of Egypt, by thousands of years, there is something even more resilient, more powerful, and more scientifically basic to why those experiments took place in the Middle East, where the land masses of the world converged at that particular point. And our findings in Brazil have come across some very interesting artifacts of a Brazilian Stonehenge, type of time orientation to realize that time is relative, it is not absolute. And with the whole findings that we're making with artifacts in stone, a few of which we've referred to in your program tonight, there's going to be a tremendous avalanche of material that's going to allow younger minds to see the quickening experience to be both the scientific and the spiritual in a new marriage.
I think that's going to be awesome. You know, I'm getting these fast blasts, and there's two questions that I'm getting over and over again. And, you know, the first one is, they're asking me, what is underneath the pyramids? That's the one big question that keeps coming up over and over again.
Well, I can answer you simply by saying there's a massive hydraulic system there that we're working with. A lot of this is kind of difficult to convey without pictures, but ultimately there will be some film studies that will be released, I believe, in the coming year or 2 years at most, that will show things that we've talked about for many, many years. It's been very difficult to do the geophysics and the hydrology and to look at the overall connection between Giza and Saqqara, and particularly the underground flow structures, but they are very, very important. And what we're looking at is a master area of how civil engineering, hydraulic engineering, astronomy, all brought, as it were, together with some would call the Bible in stone, the Great Pyramid being the quintessence of the model of life and the building block, which is the Pyramid of Ascension into many different realms of experience.
Now the other question I'm getting over and over is the 2012, you know, question, how that ties into pyramid prophecies or any of the other prophecies that you want to throw in there.
Well, you know, we don't feel that it's the end of the world in 2012, but the Mayans certainly understood the solar cycles and some of the astrophysical cycles, and there are probably going to be a lot more solar flares and different changes that are taking place in the universe. So this is all just kind of building up, and we do feel the planet goes through cycles from alpha and omega. We talked about different cataclysms. People are being prepared for massive changes that are taking place through storms, through perhaps volcanoes, different aspects that we feel the sun actually can influence this planet in ways that we haven't even discovered yet. The keys talk about massive solar flares really being the beginning of the tipping of changes for the whole planetary system. But this is all coordinated, as you know, with other levels of intelligence who are watching what's going on and who are preparing us for the changes, and we'll be ready.
I think the recent findings of the Olmec civilization in an earlier form of writing in stone in Mexico are very, very exciting, because this confirms what is also in Key 215 of the Guatemalan Triangle that reaches up to La Venta and places in the central part of Mexico that will be basically libraries of information that will come literally out of the ground, giving a clear understanding of the North American nativistic tradition that is so important, that we believe is one of the reasons for the myth of the eternal return focusing so much in this area between Mexico and certain parts of North America.
Now, do you know anything about, now there's a lot of Native American prophecies, they talk about the blue star returning, or, you know, I hear quite a bit about that. Have you come across that in your research?
Well, the Nahuatl traditions of Mexico do speak of what we call a blue dome-like feature that will be seen in the sky. We believe these are harbingers of a much greater change that's coming, and in some ways we feel that it's coming to the Native in the Hispanic people first because of greater love that they are showing for humanity and also from Mother Earth. I think what has happened in the industrial north is that the rational mind has divided, as it were, its reality into black and white and cannot understand the subtle colors, which you would call the bioplasmic life forms of intelligence that can take on different shapes, different forms of physical appearance. But I believe that will ultimately be overcome as we see emerging of cultural symbiosis between the Hispanic brothers and sisters with the Native Americans, with peoples who are going to realize that there are new directions that must come forth from a emergent spirituality that's not based upon the old black and white theocracies, theologies, and scientific methodologies. So if I can just quote the keys as we reach the end of our period, key 313 tells us there is a direct relationship between the size of the universe, the diameter of the proton, and man's or the human range of vision, which is part of a larger mass energy space-time transformation now taking place, which involves changes in our basic concepts of the known universe. What we understand is life and the universe itself will change, and we're going to recognize that we're just changing our frequencies of the evolutionary process, that we are growing up, and we are beginning to realize that there is a much greater plan in the book of life that will ultimately result in cosmic citizenship for all of us. We will inherit what the ancients called the theme of Hono Universalis, universal mankind, and we will be able to reach out like the prophets and sages of the old period with the angelic manifestations, clearly, I believe, in this generation of humanity.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think heaven on earth is coming back due to popular demand.
in the Lord's Prayer, in the original Aramaic, Tabul Malkuteka, thy kingdom come on earth, means literally that the earth is not going to be destroyed, but it's going to be renewed, regenerated in some remarkable way of the quickening of consciousness reaching out. There's going to be a whole new physics of consciousness that will bring religion and science together. And mm-hmm. in that moment of change, the visitations that you and others have had, the sightings in the heavens, what we've seen with the Zulu people in Africa, the Hispanic people in Mexico, and in Peru and other areas will bear witness to the wonderful experiences of the divine manifestation coming back.
And as we said, we're doomed to perfection. So really, we just have to awaken and open our eyes to really the greater cosmology that's all around us.
I love that
let
line.
Let us be blessed with this great vision.
Yeah, like doomed for enlightenment, doomed for oneness. You know, it's a good one. You know, I've got to wrap it up here. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We'll have to have you back again because there's just so many other questions we'd like to cover. But,
well, we appreciate that very much, and we appreciate who you are as you go forth with the great insights of sharing a much greater message of how our physical universe doesn't exist independent of our thoughts. Our thoughts are attitudes. Our love is so important as we shape each day. Every way we grow better and better. May God's love shine through us, and may we be always looking ad astra to the stars for the greater map of our human experience, our human evolutionary process.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, JJ and Desiree, and keep up that awesome
bless
work
you and
you're
all
doing.
Of our great correspondents and our good friends throughout the universe and the planet, in other words, Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm. And we'll definitely stay in touch, and we'll have you on the show again soon.
Thank you.
Bless you.
All right. Take care. Have a great evening. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.